Welcome to the Design the Future podcast, where we talk with women leading the way towards a better built world. Design the Future is hosted by me, Lindsay Baker, with Kira Gould. Let's get started. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Design the Future podcast. It's good to be with you. This is Lindsay.
And this is Kira.
And yeah, here we are. It's a brand new week in California.
Indeed. How are you, Lindsay? How are things?
I am doing all right. It's my first week working in my new job. And so it's been a lot of exciting, just new jobs, right? Like there's a lot, but being a new CEO is a particular beast. I don't know if other people have gone through this, but I've been rereading books like The First 90 Days and all of this, like to prepare and make sure I get oriented as fast as I can. So it's been a lot. I spend a lot of time at my desk now, which is a new thing. I'm really getting into like the ergonomics of standing desks and different kinds of mats and all of that. It's like, it's a lot, but I'm doing great. I'm really excited.
That's awesome, Lindsay. It's great to hear. I can't wait to see where that all goes. It's going to be very exciting to sort of follow it subtly on the podcast along the way. Yeah, it's been an interesting few weeks. There's a lot of, I would say a lot of climate angst in the air these days following the IPCC report. You know, lots of discussion about how to turn that anxiety into action. Such a weird thing, that report. It wasn't as if it were, I mean, it didn't have any surprises, I don't think, for most of us that have been following things, the climate science for a while. But it's kind of a weird feeling to see these pieces about the rapid climate change, the impacts really being felt all over the world. And I feel kind of like a sick dread about it all, but it's also sort of weirdly leavened with like a kind of relief that now that it's visible, maybe the big systems changes that we need can begin. I don't know.
Yeah. I know what you mean. I think I've been grappling with this week too. And I think part of it is that we've all learned that we sort of have a responsibility to pay attention, right? We can't just decide, oh, I don't really want to listen to that stuff. It's so dismal. Because when you don't pay attention, you don't act.
Right.
And yet doing so can be really emotionally taxing. So I've been trying to find ways to get engaged with the material, but also keep a mindfulness about like not getting myself totally wrung out by it. Or, you know, maybe you need to get wrung out by it and take a minute to do that. And that's okay too. But it's, you know, just being able to come back. It's reminds me of that, like the song that Ayanna Elizabeth Johnson mentions in her podcast, that the Sunrise Movement sings, that like, you know, take a nap and come back tomorrow song. It's basically just, you know, you don't have to do this alone. So like, if you're having a hard day, take a break and come back the next day. And, you know,
absolutely. Well, it is true too. Like I think, a lot of people that have worked in this realm for a long time know this, but more people are sort of understanding it. And like, understanding what's happening with global warming intellectually is different than sort of feeling its presence and seeing its presence in daily life around, you know, and so as more of that happens, we have to actually sort of actively figure out how to process it and how much of it we can take on in any given day before that nap, you know?
Yeah.
It's a thing, and how to talk to various people about it too. I'm trying to figure out how to talk to my 11-year-old son about it in a way that doesn't sound like, you know, sorry, this is really, really bad.
This is really, really bad. Oh man. Yeah. I hope that after this episode airs, there is like a wave of, you know, suggested books and things for you, Kira. Cause I don't have any kids, so I don't really keep track of this thing, but I feel like I've heard people share resources of like, oh, this is a good way to talk to your kid, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, it's, I admit I have a hard time with it too, knowing how to talk to people about it. People who don't share my political beliefs, for example.
Well, that is the interesting thing too, about it becoming more prevalent, because, you know, right now it really does feel like every business, every government, every job has something to do with climate, right? So this notion that it's a niche thing and that some people over in the corner are kind of thinking about it and worrying about it, that's kind of not where we are anymore.
I think that's part of what is so important about this sort of don't look away argument, is that part of what we're trying to do here as a climate movement is to continuously talk about how tragic some of the effects of climate change have been, and to make it emotional and to make it real and to make it something that we're actually all facing, rather than trying to, you know, kind of compartmentalize and say like, well, let's talk about greenhouse gases in a rational way and focus on efficiency. It's like, no, actually, we got to freak out. Think about all the things together. We got to really talk about how it's impacting people's lives.
That's right. And then also be able to talk about, okay, and what can we do in our community today to address that, you know?
Yeah. Which is a great transition to introduce our guest for the day.
Yes, absolutely. We are delighted to have Robin Eason with us. Welcome, Robin.
Thank you. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, we're so pleased you're here. I'm going to do a brief intro and then we'll jump into some questions. Robin is currently the Long Range Planning and Sustainability Manager at the City of West Hollywood. She started at the city in 2016 as its first sustainability planner, managing citywide sustainability projects, including EV charging readiness, clean energy initiatives, water efficiency and conservation, climate action planning, and green building. That is a lot. Prior to West Hollywood, Robin served as group manager for the GBCI certification team at the US Green Building Council in Washington, and she holds a Bachelor of Science in Architecture and a Bachelor of Civil Engineering from Catholic University and a Master's in City and Regional Planning from Clemson. She's an active member of the American Institute of Certified Planners, the Urban Sustainability Directors Network, Green Cities California, and she serves on the board of directors at USGBC Los Angeles. And she's recently been recognized with a Women in Sustainability Leadership Award. We are really delighted to have you, Robin. And to kick us off, I would love it if you could just start by sort of telling us about how and why you got involved in planning and economic development and in sustainability at the community level. What has been your path?
Yes, thank you. Happy to take you down memory lane. I would say, you know, not unlike some of your other guests, my path has really consisted of a series of pivots, with the built environment being the common thread throughout my schooling and throughout my career. And so my focus, as you mentioned, in undergrad was a dual degree program in architecture and civil engineering. And that was really because I was strong in math, science, and art in high school. Always curious about how things work, go together. And so when my parents and I were talking about a professional degree to pursue, architecture kind of kept coming up into the mix. And then the academic institution I ended up choosing had that dual degree program. We thought that was an even better combo to at least start out pursuing academically in undergrad. And then I guess about 3 years into that program, I started becoming a little restless with that academic curricula. And just wanted to explore maybe some other options that I could go into, you know, after I finished up that dual degree program. I was kind of in it by that point, 3 years, and I only had a couple years left and didn't want to switch courses midstream, but I knew for any kind of graduate study, I wanted to possibly pursue something different that leveraged the foundation of architecture and civil engineering. And so really kind of stumbled upon city and regional planning, urban planning as a field of study. And what I liked about that was that it provided that context or that story about the built environment at a much broader scale than I was learning in my architecture and engineering courses. And I was sort of really fascinated by, you know, the economic forces that influenced the city, the community dynamics that influenced the neighborhood, you know, what were some of the historical investments that cause places to thrive or disinvestments that prevent them from thriving, you know, all of these really kind of cerebral questions around what makes cities, cities and places. And so pivoted into city and regional planning for grad school, learned a lot about all of those concepts, and then landed with a urban economics advisory firm upon graduation in Washington, DC, which did a lot of neighborhood revitalization projects in collaboration with larger master planning firms, transportation engineers, urban designers, community outreach experts. And so we were usually hired as part of a larger team to analyze the market dynamics of a particular neighborhood, sub-region, planning area, and worked with that team to figure out kind of a 10 to 15 year visionary plan for that particular geographic location. And so it was a great experience in getting my feet wet in demography, in income trend analysis, in analyzing the competitiveness of different real estate markets, you know, the healthiness of you know, the retail environment of a given location, all of that kind of stuff. And then really quantify all of that with interviews with developers and with community members about what they saw in a particular area related to investment, or what did they wanted to see in terms of jobs or grocery stores. And so by working in a multidisciplinary setting, I came across architects that had lead AP behind their names and was very curious as to what that was. This was back in maybe 2006. And they introduced me to the LEED Green Building Rating Systems and USGBC as a whole. And I just found myself being very fascinated with the conversations that were going on about green building at the time and also within USGBC. And so I would say this is kind of where luck really struck my professional career. I was in DC, the USGBC headquarters was located in DC, and I just decided to put my hat in the ring and see what may stick in terms of applying for a job and maybe getting an interview. And it just so happened that I was successful at getting an interview, was called in, and at the time USGBC was piloting their green communities rating system called LEED for Neighborhood Development. And they needed someone with my background in planning, neighborhood revitalization, and economic development to kind of help see that rating system through its pilot program and then into a bona fide LEED rating system. And because I had the architecture and civil engineering educational background, they were like, oh, you can help us with certifications of the green building rating systems as well. And so it was really kind of a match made in heaven. And that was really the kickoff into district scale sustainability work for me.
This is so cool, Robin. Okay, so there's so much behind this, but I want to ask you the next question before we get to talk about your work now, which is what should people know about getting into the profession that you're in now? Like, what should people know about working with cities in particular?
Yeah, great question. You know, I would say that cities are really kind of a great way to really forward this climate change movement. I mean, I would say 10 years ago, cities were still kind of getting caught up to how they could be a kind of a participant in this story. And now, you know, there are countless positions out there at various local governments that really have sustainability as part of the title in their positions in organizations. And many of the more progressive cities have sustainability in many of the job descriptions that don't necessarily have sustainability in their title. And so it's really been fascinating to be part of this kind of collective influence at the local government level to be able to push public policy, both at the local level and the regional level, but also at the state and federal level, and figure out how we could harness that power, you know, across borders to really promote change and to push the needle in the direction that we really want to go into. And so it's been a fascinating ride at the City of West Hollywood, and it's been really great to learn from other colleagues about their tenures at different local municipalities and how they've been able to influence their city councils and their leadership to do more to combat climate change.
Yeah, I love it. I love this work. I get excited every time. This scale just becomes more and more fascinating to me working with cities. Okay, so in particular, are there things that you feel like people should come into the profession knowing or being good at or like having a certain mind for, or, you know, like things that are particularly hard about the job that you want people to know?
Yeah, all the things, right? I would say, planning and sustainability are both incredibly broad fields in and of their own, right? And so I think sometimes when you're trying to chart a career path in sustainability planning, it can be very daunting to kind of know where to begin. And I like to kind of put that on its head and say that there's just infinite amount of opportunity and to really kind of craft what I call micro careers, micro experiences, micro opportunities into what can eventually be kind of this magical nonlinear approach to your career trajectory. I'm a case in point. I started in private sector, I moved to nonprofit, and then I moved to the public sector, but that was all unplanned, but just me taking advantage of the opportunity that I was able to find myself in at the time. And so I think what I would offer those that are entering this profession are a few thoughts. I would say, always be curious, learn more about the organization than just your role, because there's different players that you're going to have to work with from different departments and of different mindsets. And so it's really just important that you know the internal environment that you're working in order to get some of your projects done, but also just keeping a pulse on the industry in general. There's so much movement going on in some of the subsectors of sustainability that you kind of have to know a little about a lot and be ready to share your knowledge with city leaders that are inquiring whether or not you can do this thing or that thing, and then also be able to know what experts to bring in to help the city along to realize some of those goals. The other thing I would say is just to be a holistic thinker, be able to really connect the dots on all of the micro disciplines and sustainability, like you and Kira were talking about in the intro. All of this stuff is interrelated. And I would say, 10 years ago, we weren't really talking about it like that, but now everyone knows that, green building relates to energy, relates to water, relates to climate resilience. And so really just knowing what's happening in both those different sub-disciplines, but also how they all kind of relate together is a skill that can take you very far in this field.
And also makes it so much fun, I would imagine, which is
absolutely
cool. Okay, so with that then, tell us a little bit about what you do every day. What does your job look like?
Yeah, so I would say any given day, you would find me doing either one of three things or all three things at once. Which is really working on some core assignments, which for me is usually a policy or program that's will reduce the city's carbon footprint. So right now I'm working on an update to our climate action plan, but in previous years, I worked on an update to our local green building code. Before that, I was working on a solo technical assistance program to launch with our community. I also work a lot cross-departmentally with other staff members to kind of realize sustainability initiatives that they are the implementers for. So as an example, right now I'm working with the facilities team to explore the feasibility of adding solar plus storage to one of our major community centers that also serves as a cooling center for our city. And so I'm liaising with them to be a knowledge resource as they go through the various steps in that process, which has been really fun. And then the last thing I'll say kind of dovetails to what I was saying before about keeping a pulse on the market. I would say multiple times a day and or multiple times a week, I'm on a thought leadership call. I'm on a peer learning call with different communities across California, you know, trying to learn about different concepts. You know, I'm in conference calls with state agencies about, you know, where things are headed from a funding stream perspective. And so I just try to keep very much in the mix of what's happening beyond West Hollywood borders. Again, just so that I can be a resource for my city leadership, but then also just kind of in general, know what's happening with the market so that I can steer the various city initiatives accordingly.
So cool. I'm really interested in so many aspects of that, but it's also just really satisfying to hear how the systems thinking and holistic perspectives manifest for you, you know, and I, yeah, it's I can totally see how like your personality works with this job, just having to talk to so many people and, you know, build relationships that mean a lot. Super cool. Okay. Well, so this is a hard one, but what would you say you're most proud of accomplishing in your work life so far? Anything, anywhere in the spectrum of, you know, personal to professional?
Yeah, great question. Big question. I think for me, it's always been about relationships. And so I think throughout my career, I've been able to build a lot of genuine, long-lasting relationships with people in and tangential to the industry. And to be clear, not just networking for networking's sake, but really being genuinely curious about who they are, you know, what makes them tick, their lived experience, you know, the source of their radical energy, you know, what were their chosen paths, and really being able to have that kind of deeper level connection, whether it be to then, you know, pay it forward, to then collaborate with those individuals on, you know, innovative ideas within our collective cities, whether it is to teach me more about myself in the process. You know, we're all kind of growing with these gnarly problems together. And even just to have confidence to call up and, you know, talk about ways that we're all trying to self-care as we do the jobs that we do. I mean, our jobs are really fun, but they can be really, really stressful and a lot of heavy content, right? And so just to have this kind of, you know, army of individuals that I can rely on and also, you know, kind of help steward some of their careers as well and match with opportunities. And they do the same for me. It's just been, I think, a really amazing part of being a professional in this space.
I love that, Robin. It's just, I love how you articulated that too. I mean, and I sort of have this image of this web, this constellation of people, and the support network that, you know, ends up feeling like. That's really great. And it seems like, I don't know, COVID really emphasized the need for that too, you know, because
absolutely
the additional stresses and sort of, I don't know. So it's interesting to think about that. So I wonder if there's a project or projects that you're working on now that you would like to bring to our listeners' attention.
Yeah, I would love to talk about a project that we affectionately call WeHo Climate Action. it is I guess I would phrase it as a people-centered, equity-first public planning process to update our 10-year-old climate action plan. And for your listeners that may not know what a climate action plan is, it's really a roadmap policy document that local jurisdictions put together to reduce their carbon footprint in a variety of sectors: energy, water, waste, transportation, building, natural environment. It really kind of depends on the local jurisdiction. And a lot of us are also exploring climate adaptation with those plans, so ways that we can start to adapt our cities to extreme climate conditions. And for West Hollywood, those conditions are really drought and extreme heat, among a few others. And so, you know, we started this process back in early 2020, pre-pandemic, and, you know, had to stop and start and pivot a bit once the pandemic really became, you know, kind of a thing we were all dealing with. And I think it really sort of gave us a new appreciation and perspective of how we designed the outreach for this project. And so, you know, one of the things that we were really intentional about from the beginning was hiring a consultant team that really prioritized or could help us prioritize the voices of subpopulations with lived experiences that may or may not normally have a seat at the table. And so for West Hollywood, we have, you know, concentrations of persons with disabilities, persons living with HIV and AIDS. We're the LGBTQ hub of LA County. We have concentrations of older adults over 65 years of age, low wealth family and individuals, and, you know, those that have been previously unhoused. And so those were some of the targeted populations that we really wanted to reach within this climate effort. Again, just highlighting, you know, their lived experience and really just understanding how we can derive outcomes and actions that can really speak to outcomes that are equitable for all, and have folks from those subpopulations be top of mind in that. And so, you know, we were able to really leverage the city's existing social services infrastructure to get the word out about our project. And luckily, you know, be it just people having either a lot of time on their hands or just genuinely being interested and wanting to contribute to our project, we were able to have a great intersection of people from those subpopulations talk to us remotely and capture some of their lived experiences. And we're able to then kind of put some of that into what will be our draft plan to be released very soon. So that's kind of what's been keeping me busy. I'm really excited about taking that project to City Council because it's really a 2.0 framework for how we're thinking about carbon neutrality and how we're doing that from an equitable lens. So that's been keeping me busy for the last year and a half.
I love that, Robin. And I think that actually highlights one of the things that that fascinates me most about work at the city community government level, which I feel like what you and others are doing is sort of showing how climate work can address, you know, can be holistically addressed, including equity in a real way, where it's so often, especially like at the higher level state, but also federal, it's very easy for people to say, you know, we have to deal with one thing at a time. There's this notion that you can't, like, don't complicate it. It's going to slow it down, whatever. But you guys are showing how to do that, right? Like in practice, on the ground, through those relationships, through that hard work of outreach and figuring out what outreach works for all those different groups that you were describing. I really love that. I think it's just, that's exactly what I think is so really powerful about the local level work.
Yeah, love that.
Well, it's a great model for the other levels, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I feel like you guys are really, it's sort of where it's happening. I want to shift gears just a little bit though. We like to talk a little bit about sort of, this is just zooming out a little. Sustainability, as you know, is often discussed as sort of a movement, but it's also an industry in some ways. And I'm just curious, you know, sort of from where you sit, do you feel like you're part of a movement, a profession, or an industry? And how do you think about that for yourself?
Yeah, a great question. Big question again. I almost want to say all three, but I definitely think I've had the privilege of being part of several movements throughout my career. You know, the first being working at the U.S. Green Building Council and being there at a time where the popularity in LEED and the excitement around LEED was just really contagious, you know? And so living in DC, you know, I couldn't walk 500 feet without seeing a LEED plaque in a building downtown. You know, family members, once they realized what I did, they would take pictures of plaques that they would see in their neighborhoods or where they lived, which was really fun just to see how infectious it was for people not even in the industry. And then when I came to California, I was surprised, but also elated to see that the state green building code, CalGreen, is sort of loosely based off the LEED rating system as well. And so it was just these kind of great examples of how much the USGBC has really influenced the green building market and how it's really in many ways become mainstream, but also how we've been able to build upon that great foundation that that organization has laid for us. The other movements that I would say that I've been a part of is more public sector related. So West Hollywood is a member of the Urban Sustainability Directors Network, also known as USDN, and we're part of Green Cities California. And these are two collectives for public sector sustainability professionals. The first one is nationwide, and also we collaborate with professionals in Canada. And then the second one, Green Cities California, is really statewide, but both of them have been really critical pieces to shaping what I was saying before about that collective influence of local government and how that can really direct and push forward thinking policy at multiple scales, be it regional, be it state, be it federal. And so it's been such a privilege to be a part of that brain trust and how we've been able to really make things stick at those higher levels of government, like you were saying before, Kira. And then the last one I'll mention is the Government Alliance on Race and Equity, also known as GARE. And very similar to USDN, this is a network of 300 plus local jurisdictions that have really committed to repairing past harms and striving for racially equitable outcomes in public policy. West Hollywood joined last year in the midst of all the racial uprisings. And in the last year, it's just been really fantastic to start having real conversations around race, how we can start to integrate racial equity into our work plans citywide and see the kind of transformation that could come from that, very much like we saw with the transformation in the green building market for USGBC, and certainly the transformation that we see at the local government level with the aid of USDN and Green Cities California. So I feel like I've been very privileged in my career to be a part of those specific movements and just looking forward to continuing to push the needle in that way.
I love the way that you talk about the way that you have like this very clear and actionable participation and ways that you engaged in movements through these organizations. It feels like such a great example to me. What we need to be doing more of, it works so well for like local government stakeholders to band together at the state or national or global scale, you know, like it, I get why that works so well. And it makes me a little jealous that it doesn't always exist that well for other types of professions, specifically as it relates to policy, but for good reasons, you know. It's just, it's really cool to hear how engaged, you know, like how you have these very, tangible ways to participate. So it leads to our next question, I think, in a pretty good way. And you can answer this however you want to, but it's about the future and sort of your ways of envisioning the future. First of all, where did you think we would be right now? Have you ever, you know, set out goals or thought to yourself visions of what the future might be, and have we lived up to them? I guess at the city scale in particular.
Oh, that is such a good question. I grapple with this a lot because in some ways I'm so busy doing that, and I'm so in the mix it's hard to kind of take a step out and being like, you know, what have we actually accomplished? But I try to look at it in a couple of ways. One is, I know West Hollywood and I know a number of other communities are just so much further along, even just in our knowledge about how all of these different concepts work, than we were 10 years ago. You know, I'm fortunate enough to be part of a city that actually had a climate action plan on the books, but there's still a lot of local governments that don't, but still do sustainability work. They just don't call it that. And so I would say, you know, because of networks like the Urban Sustainability Directors Network, and because of all of these different ways to kind of share thought leadership, I've been really astounded at the progress that the public sector have made over the last 10 years in this industry. You know, we've exceeded our greenhouse gas emission reduction goals that we set back in 2011, and that we, you know, thought we wouldn't get, what we wouldn't reach until 2025, you know, and that is in large part due to the dedication and commitment of local governments to recognize their power, harness that, and do what we can both within our borders, but then also collaborate, you know, regionally and statewide. And when we have those opportunities at the federal level. And so I've just been really excited to sit from where I do and see all the progress that we've been able to make. And a large part of that too has been technology related. You know, electric vehicles weren't a thing pre-2010 really. And now I can't walk two blocks without, you know, seeing a Chevy Bolt or seeing a Tesla parked on the side of the road. And it's just a testament to how far we've come, even just in the ability to do and dream about certain things. You know, that said, I do wonder, you know, we were on such a great trajectory with the Obama administration. And I do wonder if we had a different administration between Obama and Biden, you know, how much further along we would be. We'd be realizing 2030 goals in 2025, you know, we'd be realizing some of the kind of national 2025 goals now. You know, it remains to be seen how we can make up for maybe some of that lost time. But I think I'm encouraged by the federal administration right now, because it seems like they understand the reason to prioritize environmental justice and equity as part of the climate discussion. And that's something that I haven't seen at the federal level at all. And so the fact that there's been this groundswell of activity to push the federal government into that direction has been, I think, really rewarding and really exciting.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it too. And I want to also give you a chance to say anything else you might be hopeful about or want to push on that you'd like to see more progress about in the future. What would you like us to get great at?
So the gnarly problem that I think a lot of us local governments are grappling with is the decarbonization of existing buildings. So really figuring out for a lot of our aged housing stock, I mean, West Hollywood, we have over 90% of our housing stock is more than 30 years old. And I'm sure there are communities that have similar stories about aged housing stock, and a lot of our housing stock too is rent stabilized, and we're dealing with an affordable housing crisis, right? And so I think a lot of us are trying to just figure out, you know, how do we crack the nugget of decarbonizing existing buildings, retrofitting existing buildings, and doing so in a way that can really preserve, you know, housing units, particularly in the market segment of that kind of middle income or workforce housing income levels, for people to be able to afford housing. And that's something that I know there are brains working on, and there are cities trying to tackle that in real time. But I think it's going to take the masses to really come up with strategies, funding streams, you know, new tools, et cetera, to really crack the code on how we do that and how we do that in an equitable way.
Yeah. It's funny. When you said that, I was thinking like, yeah, that does really feel to me to be like the hot topic these days in many communities that intellectual communities that I'm in. And yet it's kind of always been the elephant in the room. It seems like it took us so long to finally be, to get, you know, it's almost like, I don't know, there's some horrible metaphor I want to make about like the low-hanging fruit tree and how like there was always way more fruit way up high in the tree that we couldn't reach, but we were like, oh, look at this thing that's easy, we'll do this, and like no one, I don't know, and we're finally there where there's so many you know, nonprofit organizations, community-based mm-hmm. organizations that are starting to get that question. And it's super cool, I think, that people are doing that now, you know, because it gives me promise. It gives me some optimism about like really as you were saying, like, we need a lot of strategies. We need a lot of, this is a gnarly issue. This is definitely not going to just be a simple matter of, you know, a quick policy that can be passed by every city, you know, or something exactly. like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's exciting. And it's exciting to know that you are there at the front of that action. Okay. Well, so we always wrap up with the same question, and I'm really excited to hear what you have to say about this, but tell us about who is inspiring you these days, anyone in the world.
Yeah. So three people come to mind. The first is Leah Penniman. She is the founder yes. of, you heard of her? Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah, she's the founder of Soulfire Farm right outside of Albany, which is an Afro-Indigenous centered community farm, really committed to food justice and food sovereignty. And I've been following her for a little while and just been completely spellbound by all of the impact she's been able to make, not only for up and coming Black and Brown farmers, but just school groups that want to learn about healthy food. She harvests a ton of food for the local community. And I think there's just a lot of great, I guess, heart-filled work that's happening on her land. And so I fangirl her. I want to meet her at some point, but she's definitely been someone that I've been inspired by. Another person that I have been inspired by too is Christopher Locke. He's a local architect here in LA and one of the founders of Designing in Color. And it's really a collective that aims to really diversify the way that architecture is taught in school to be able to really harness and amplify voices of those that have been historically oppressed. And so they teach a lot of the college-age students about not designing for designing's sake, but really going into communities that they might be designing a site for, designing spaces for, to have them be part of the process and influencing how they might, you know, go through space or go through a building, so that they're really developing and designing buildings that really cater to the population that they're supposed to be serving, which I think is fantastic and necessary concept to be introducing into architecture schools. So hats off to Chris. And then finally, I would just say Monique Lopez, who's the founder of Pueblo Planning and one of the outreach consultants on our climate action plan. She's been really the leader in some of our targeted engagement to the subpopulations I mentioned earlier. And just really respect her ethos. You know, she has a philosophy around social justice planning that revolves around three R's: reciprocity, respect, repair, and relationships. And it's just been so thrilling to have her energy on our project and her know-how on our project, and has really opened my mind too in ways that we can do equity-centered climate action planning beyond what I could have even imagined being a part of our WeHo Climate Action project. So I'm inspired by her every day and feel very privileged to be able to work with her. So those would be my three people.
Oh my gosh, I'm inspired by you being inspired by these people. I don't know how to say that in a more eloquent way, but it's like, what a nice way. I'm just right now just appreciating that this gets to be a part of our day. And I hope that that feels that way for all of you that are listening as well. Like, these are awesome people. That's great. It's just a great bit of energy that I am thankful for right now. And yeah, Robin, I'm so thankful for you. We're so happy to have had you on the podcast. It's been such a pleasure.
Oh, thanks so much. This was really fun. Appreciate you both.
Yay. Well, and Kira, I appreciate you too. I hope you have a great week. Good luck with
likewise both of you. Thanks.
And that is it for us this week on the Design the Future podcast. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. Please leave us a review on Apple. It really matters. It helps people find us. Stay safe, and we'll see you next week.